Fantastic. We are cooking.
Hello.
Hi. Firstly, it's fantastic to see you in person. Thank you for coming on to speak to the community. Let's just start from the beginning, Corinna. Your experiences with anxiety, have you dealt with anxiety personally? And everything that you're doing at the moment, how are you
Yeah,
helping
sure.
people
So,
with
yes,
anxiety?
I have suffered with anxiety pretty much since I was a child, actually. I remember as clear as clear, I watched a 60-minute show where a young child got sick, and I was about 6 or 7 at the time. And anyway, I don't know what my parents were doing to let me watching it, but anyway, that's another story. And this little girl had cancer, got her leg amputated, and ended up passing away. And I remember my mum telling me to head off to bed that night. And I stood at my door crying. And she said, "Why don't you want to go to bed? What's wrong?" And I said, "I don't want to go to bed because I don't want to get sick and I don't want to die." And ever since then, it was a trigger moment for me that anytime I heard of anything, I then assumed that I would take on those symptoms. So I suffered with health anxiety pretty much my whole life, and it really was totally debilitating, stopped me from doing a lot of things. And I decided to go on a quest to investigate all of the things that I could to help me, because there was only so much talk therapy I could do. And having health-related anxiety, I was also scared to take medication because what if I had a side effect? So it was about me just personally investigating all of the things that I could do to calm my nervous system and settle my anxiety. And that's pretty much what my passion is, and my one purpose in life is if I can help one person become better and not have to deal with anxiety like I did on a day-to-day basis, that will be like a dream come true. And that's my career now, is helping people deal with anxiety.
Oh, that's wonderful. And that's really interesting that you actually knew exactly when the trigger was. So you said it was like this specific moment when you was young, that's real, that obviously stored vividly in your memory and then replayed every time as a child that you would hear someone going through health difficulties. That's really interesting. So as you developed health anxiety, you said that obviously when you saw or heard symptoms that would trigger the health anxiety, how were you with your own symptoms? So when you naturally got sick, would you as you grew? So if we go a bit further, say to your teenage years or young adult years, how would you deal when you got sick? Would you instantly
Yeah,
think
well,
that
I
it
was
was the
really
worst case
fortunate.
scenario?
I'm actually a very healthy person, so I never really actually got sick. Just really little things were triggers for me. So, say for example, I remember watching a show that was a comedy. It was a comedy movie with Goldie Hawn in it, and she choked on a chicken bone, went to heaven, and it was this comedy show. After that, do you think I could eat? My health-related anxiety jumped to, oh my gosh, I can't eat, I'm going to choke. And this went on for months when I was probably in about grade 7. So I think in Australia we're maybe grade 11 or 10 or 11 at that age. And my mum used to have to come and pick me up from school and take me home and feed me jelly and ice cream, because that's literally all I could eat. So it was funny little triggers. It's not until I hear of something that then that anxiety would spike. So you could imagine what even COVID did a couple of years ago. That was absolutely rattled my nervous system. And then having it myself, really actually, it felt like I had PTSD after a week at home with COVID on my own, to be honest. It was like the perfect storm. So that though in itself was amazing, because I don't think I'd ever suffered so badly with my nervous system being so dysregulated after that. And to be able to use a lot of my practices and the tools that I'd learned was pretty much the only way that I was able to rejoin the workforce and get myself feeling back to normal.
Well, that's wonderful that you were able to recover from COVID. So very happy regarding that. Regarding health anxiety, a lot of people feed into Dr. Google. So they'll start to search the symptoms and then it can really send them down a spiral because we know with health anxiety, you're always looking for the worst case scenario. When you type in your symptoms to Google, it's predetermined to come up with the worst case scenario. And if it doesn't, your anxious mind is definitely going to find it. Did you ever have trouble with Googling symptoms? And if so, how did you break that cycle?
Yeah, that's so common, even with a lot of my clients who come in to see me. I think when we're anxious and we have health-related anxiety as well, we're very much looking for some surety because, you know, anxiety is feeling unsure about so many variables. So the trouble with Google is, as you said, it's worst-case scenario. And even if you find something and you start reading it and you think, oh, those symptoms are all okay, if there's one tiny little thing that's like off, that's all you focus on then. You might read 10 things to say, this is just anxiety or whatever, but you read one little thing that, oh, it could be this ailment or this, and then that's where your focus goes. So it's very, very hard because, you know, we're quite inquisitive just generally as human beings. So we really are looking and trying to get answers. And I think sometimes that's the hardest part in a day and age for us at the moment where there is information overload. It's still very, very hard just to sit in solitude and sit with ourselves and really tune in. So the distraction of the internet and wanting to know and how do I fix it and what else can I do? You know, that's a trap in itself. We've never had so much information at our disposal before, but then that information's also quite dangerous. So for me, I think the hardest thing for me was breaking the cycle of being okay with sitting with myself and learning to regulate, learning to breathe, learning to be back in my body and taking away that distraction from, you know, Googling and jumping on the minute I felt something. You know, I used to jump on and I'd be taking my heart rate all the time and checking it. And it's just, you know, it's kind of habit stacking, to be honest. It's like, you know, if I got up and brushed my teeth, I'd stand there and I'd do a round of EFT in the mirror, or I'd come downstairs and I'd make a cup of tea and I'd sit down and I'd do some meditation. So trying to kind of break that habit of just wanting to grab my phone to have a look at, are these symptoms normal or is this anxiety?
Yeah. I love how you tackled it by breaking the cycle, because like you say, it almost becomes a compulsion for people with health anxiety. And I can really relate to what you said about someone can look at 100 different symptoms and it just takes that one to really then attach to, and then when they attach to that symptom, you end up going down a spiral and convincing yourself that there is something seriously wrong with you, because when your brain's searching for this relatability, it's going to find it and then it's going to convince you, and then that's going to cause the anxiety to spike, which will then put you in this cycle of high levels of anxiety, which is manifesting with physical symptoms. And you becoming convinced that you have this serious illness. So I really love what you said about sitting with it, because that is what you have to do with, regardless of if it's health anxiety, panic disorder, agoraphobia, it's actually sitting and leaning into the anxiety, understanding that even though it feels very, very uncomfortable, anxiety is not dangerous. It's a natural response. It's just happening in a disorderly fashion. So it's happening when there's no saber-toothed tiger in front of us, when we're crossing the road, when we cross the road and there's a car coming, it's anxiety that helps us step back to keep us safe. So anxiety is not always the enemy. It can be very useful for us. It's just that when we're going through an anxiety disorder, it's happening in a disorderly fashion. I love that what you said about leaning into it, because that is a massive message that we have in the community, and also EFT. So I have had experience of EFT. When my father passed away, I had some counseling for the grief side of things, because I was going through a panic disorder, but I hadn't processed the grief of the loss. And on the panic side, I was actually introduced to EFT and how it works. So just for the community who may not be aware what EFT is and how it works, and how they could start to practice it, are you able to just let us know all about it?
Basically, is a sequence of tapping points that work on the meridians. So we actually are calming the body and bringing ourselves back into the frontal lobe, so the amygdala, and making sure that we are actually coming back into a more aligned, grounded body. So we do what's called a setup statement. So it's finding like a karate chop on the side of the hand. So when you were speaking about, you know, leaning into it, we actually do go to that pain point. So, you know, for me, if I'm feeling anxious, it might be, even though I'm feeling extremely anxious and it's making me uncomfortable, I know that it's safe to be in my body and I can relax. So we go to what's giving us the issue or the anxiety, and we talk about it, and then we follow it with something that's really lovely, like it's safe for me to be in my body, or I love and accept myself totally. And then what we do after the setup statement is we start to tap on the acupressure points around the face, and down onto the collarbone, under the arm, and the crown of the head. And basically we're repeating literally what our setup statements were. So it might be this anxiety, even though I'm feeling anxious. And you start to then let your body know through these acupressure points that you're actually okay, that even though you're talking about something that you're fearful of or that's causing you anxiety, these points are actually bringing you back into your body, realigning all of the meridians, and you're starting to actually realize that being in your body is safe. And then usually what we do is we finish the tapping sequence with, you know, I'm feeling happy, I'm feeling safe, I'm feeling relaxed. And what we usually do is rate our experience. So, you know, if your anxiety was a 10 out of 10, after you do 3 rounds of tapping, we're hoping to get it down to about a 4. Then you might do another round of tapping and reduce it to about a 2. So it's such a phenomenal tool. And what's beautiful about it as well is that they've actually proven that you don't actually physically have to tap. You could be, say, sitting on the subway, driving in the car, and if you start to get a little bit anxious, you can actually just start to tap and repeat phrases as if you're imagining it, and it still has the same benefits, which is phenomenal.
Oh, that's interesting. And like you said, there's been a lot of research into it, EFT, and how it works for anxiety, because it really does. I remember having the conversation with my doctor and them saying, because in my doctor's surgery, we were very lucky. We had someone who was practicing EFT literally in the same building, so they would refer them to this person. And they said that the results they were getting was phenomenal, that it was really working. The doctor actually didn't really have the knowledge of why or how it works. You said you've got this round of different pressure points that you work on when you do the cycle. Is there a specific amount of time that you have to spend tapping at each point, or does it not matter? And also, when you're tapping the points, how is that working? How is that lowering the anxiety?
There is a sequence that you want to follow. And basically, we say, you know, around 7 to 10 times. But basically, it's just for what feels good for you too, and also what your statement is. You know, for some people, it could be just this feeling. It might be just tapping and breathing. And basically, each of our points actually have a different physical point in the body, but also a different meaning. So, for example, here could be grief, stored grief and whatnot. So there are so many different actual feelings that come into these different pressure points as well that we can clear. And the whole idea is it's all about bringing our body back to balance and getting all of our meridians to be clear and all lined up so that energetically as a whole, we are balanced. But also it's taking us out of that fight and flight and bringing us back into our body and into our logic thinking brain, so that when we're heightened. And with anxiety, for a lot of people, it's the first thing, it's fight and flight usually that comes in. We want to escape. So it's actually being able to just calm ourselves down and come back into a more regulated body.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And regarding your own personal experience, how did you come across EFT for yourself? Do you remember the first time that you implemented it into yourself, and what was the initial result?
It was basically when I first moved to the Gold Coast. I was in a very big heightened state of anxiety to the point where I was actually getting tested for MS because the physical symptoms were literally like I had ants crawling over me everywhere. So my doctor sent me off for tests, and the neurologist basically said, "Look, this isn't MS. This is your nervous system, and you need to go home and learn to relax." And I actually booked in to see a psychologist who was practicing here on the Gold Coast. She was one of the first ones who was doing EFT. Her name is Dr. Peter Stapleton, and she is doing some phenomenal work in the field of EFT. And they've just published incredible studies about what the meridians actually are, and that they're not this phantom line anymore. It's actually physical. And I actually was lucky enough to see her. So we went through some tapping to shift some anxiety, and after one session, I was feeling so much more grounded, and I just thought, oh my goodness, what is this all about? I need to learn this. So I practiced it myself for many, many years, and then decided to get qualified to be able to work with people myself.
That's wonderful. And do you remember you said obviously you like to scale the anxiety so you get to go from a 10 to a 4. And like you said, that's some incredible shifts for anyone who's going through an anxiety disorder. Going from a 10 to 4 feels phenomenal. So I can imagine with your clients that you get some great results and it can really get some much needed relief from this fight or flight symptom that they're in, this fight or flight stage. Regarding keeping it up, how long did it would you advise someone to do this tapping cycle for throughout the day? Is there a certain amount of
Well,
times
look, I
that
honestly,
works best?
like everything in moderation, but it's the most beautiful tool. It can be used as often as you actually need it. It's one of the most beautiful self-regulating tools that I give to a lot of my clients. Most of them I try to encourage them to do in the mornings, because for a lot of people, morning anxiety is very, very high. So I always get them to try and start the day with it. And then I say to them, it's just such a wonderful tool. Use it as you need. So if something stirs them up or they're feeling a bit heightened, they can do a round on it. But the beauty of it is, even if you're feeling a little bit sluggish, short of energy, you can do it to pep yourself up as well. So, depending on where we're also sitting on our ladder for regulation, if we're down low and feeling like we need a little bit of a pep, we can also use it for that as well, which is just, it's so beautiful and wonderful to teach to children as well.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And regarding obviously as a tool, there's no side effects, which is wonderful. So only the good side effects of using it. That's really interesting, and yeah, really great to speak to someone who's practicing it and seeing the results firsthand. I can say personally, when I used it, it definitely lowered the anxiety in the moment. So as a tool for helping anxiety, I can say that it worked for me. Which is wonderful. I just want to ask, get to some questions, Corinne. I can see the loading up on the screen. So if we just go from either a personal experience or something that maybe you've dealt with in your practice, and then we can just give some general advice on some of the questions, that'd be wonderful. So someone is it's not really a question, more of a statement. I have really bad health anxiety, and I'm experiencing really bad nausea. Do we know why people start to feel sick when they're anxious? And do you have any top tips for
Yeah,
this person, what they can
absolutely.
do in
What you
that
need to
moment?
remember is that anxiety is all about how regulated our vagus nerve is. And there is so much research and study out there about the vagus nerve and the connection to the gut. And remember, our gut's our second brain, really. So anytime that things are not functioning well here, we're very scattered, we're very anxious, of course we're going to go down into the gut and, either feel nauseous, off our food. So much occurs in the gut. So the one thing that I could suggest is learn some beautiful somatic exercises so that you can start to regulate your nervous system. One of the most beautiful techniques that I give to a lot of clients, it's called ESR. All you do is three fingertips here, and you just pop them up on your forehead, and you just breathe and sit in stillness. And that takes all of the blood out of the gut, comes back here again. So very, very simple, beautiful tools.
No, that's wonderful. for. So you're raising the arms, like you say, higher than the heart, so the blood moves from the stomach up. That's a really good technique. And it's really good live this because you're giving practical tips and tools for people to help them in the moment. So thank you so much for sharing that. I think if we can do four more questions, that'll be wonderful. So someone's put, how do I deal with morning anxiety? So we know that morning anxiety is very common. Often when we wake, we have this shot of cortisol that wakes us up, the natural response. However, when we're in fight or flight mode, this natural response can then manifest into anxiety and can really kickstart that anxiety and set you up for an anxious day. How do we break that cycle? How do we help someone when they're waking
Yeah,
up and they're feeling
absolutely. And you know, I've
anxious?
struggled with this myself, so I know firsthand how debilitating it can feel that the minute you open your eyes and, you know, scan your body or think about your day ahead, the anxiety spikes, and there's nothing worse. So a couple of tips is try and stay away from the caffeine. I love a little morning coffee, but I know that when my nervous system is slightly out of kilter, that extra bit of caffeine will just be enough to give me the jitters. So try and stay away from the caffeine. Have a breakfast if you can with protein in it, because also unstable blood sugar levels can also mimic anxiety. So having a decent breakfast with protein is really important. Then what I do is, you know, on Instagram, all we see are these elaborate morning rituals. I think it's got to be something that's achievable. I have a beautiful little 6-minute meditation that I follow, a guided meditation, and then I do a round of EFT scripting. And then I've got a little fur baby dog here who sits with me. He's here wanting to join in.
An emotional support
Even
dog,
if
I
I
love
feel
that.
shocking, I put his lead on and I walk around the park that's in front of my house, which takes 12 minutes. Now, I'm not going to lie, some mornings I have to really talk to myself to get myself around the park because I've got jelly legs, racing heart rate. Sometimes I cry because I get so disappointed that, you know, why am I still dealing with this? But I make myself do it, and then no word of a lie, but the time I get home and I see the joy in his face, it's shifted some of my anxiety. So movement, get yourself someone or something or a little fur baby you can co-regulate with, a good breakfast and just some small little habits, even if it's just holding those ESR points and doing 10 deep breaths, and being gentle with yourself because we're human and it's a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, I love what you said about meditation, and you said about a 6-minute technique. So doesn't have to be half an hour, doesn't have to be 45 minutes. It can be 6 minutes, and you can find benefit from that. Regarding if someone wants to search for a 6-minute technique,
Well, there's
where
some
can they find
beautiful
something like
free
that?
apps that you can download. Insight Timer is great. There's some beautiful ones in there that I actually use Insight Timer myself, and there's a lovely 6-minute one that I do every morning. And it's just about setting up your day for positivity, and being like really thankful for your body, because I think sometimes as well when we're anxious or dealing with health-related anxiety, we can beat ourselves up a little bit too much about wanting to have different things or our body kind of function in different ways. So having that gratitude first thing in the morning for, you know, these feet that can walk and these hands that can hold other people and draw or do whatever, you know, it's a really nice reminder to actually be thankful and also, yeah, kinder to ourselves. So insight is fabulous.
And almost sending love out to the world as well, because we know that many people are dealing with anxiety. It's not just ourselves, one in three, probably more, one in two now, especially since COVID and everything that's happening in the world. So we know that we're not the only ones going through an anxiety disorder. However, our mind does try and trick us and tell us that we're isolated, we're alone, and we're always going to feel this way. But it's really important to say that it's a temporary moment that we're going through, and even though it's very uncomfortable, and like you say, you have these days where you get overwhelmed, you cry, and it's okay to cry. So if you feel like this emotion's building up and you want to cry, it's actually good to cry because it can help reduce anxiety and stress and regulate the system. I love how you mentioned the benefits of a dog. I watched a program on it here in the UK, and it actually blew my mind how in tune animals, especially dogs, are with our emotions. and it was speaking about this person who was dealing with anxiety. And every time that they would get anxious and their heart rate would increase, the dog would naturally increase their heart rate to mimic their owner, to make them feel less alone, to make them feel that they're not going through it. And I just, that really blew my mind. And if I could give a dog to everyone going through an anxiety disorder, I think it really helps. And I'm just wondering your experience with your dog when you're in that anxious moment. Do you feel that they can sense you being anxious?
Absolutely. And what he knows. Well, he's 13, so he's seen me through a lot of things, this poop. And yeah, he'll literally curl up. I'm not sure if you could see him before, but he has a little spot on the couch where he loves to kind of lie there. But if I'm bad, he will actually come from that spot and come to me and kind of nuzzle in, like, come on, give me a pat. And even just that patting, you know, releases endorphins, calms the nervous system. And yeah, he just knows. And some mornings, if I'm not great, he'll kind of look at me like, hey, come on, we need to go for that walk. So yeah, definitely. And, you know, I tell a lot of people that, though, because a lot of people think that co-regulating has to be with another human, but it doesn't. Dogs and cats are incredible to co-regulate with. So fur babies are definitely on my list, high up on my list of things to prescribe to people.
That's wonderful. I can see. Yeah, I can see other people have dogs, which is fantastic to see. And they're actually using it in the medical field now and almost prescribing emotional animals for people, like you say, because it's not just humans. It's amazing how a dog can come up to you and pat you and put their paw on you when they know that you're going through anxiety. That really blows my mind.
A quick story.
But it's a fantastic tool.
I teach kinesiology courses. So I have a group of ladies coming at the moment, and one of them has a beautiful brown chocolate lab that she brings as her support dog for extreme anxiety. And it was really interesting because her name's Rosie the dog. When some of the other ladies were starting to talk and share their stories and getting a bit overwhelmed, Rosie would actually go over to them and nudge their feet as if to say, it's okay, I'm here. And it was just so beautiful to see, because even before the tears would come to these ladies, Rosie would be at their feet like, it's okay, I'm here. So yeah, just beautiful.
Yeah, that's incredible. And just going back to the morning routine, which, again, very thankful for the tips that you've shared. I definitely agree with trying to get anything, even if it's something small to eat, because you mentioned about blood sugars and being, when your blood sugars are dysregulated, that can mimic anxiety. I was having a good conversation with Dr. Amen, who's a fantastic psychiatrist. And he said about the importance of regulating your blood sugars. So, yeah, thank you for that tip. And, yeah, like you say, leaning into the anxiety and just continuing movement. If you can get outside, going for a walk can help release those endorphins. We know that helps release anti-anxiety chemicals around the body. So that can start to reduce anxiety. So that really great tips there. So I just want to maybe go through two more questions, if that's okay with you. Fantastic. I'm just having a look now. Will be a second. Yeah, so someone's dealing with social anxiety. They're feeling like they want to interact with people, but they can't. So the anxiety is almost holding them back. How would you help them in this situation? Because they want to get out there, which is great to see, because with some people we know when they're feeling anxious, they'll do the opposite and they'll try and avoid the situation and they won't want to do it. So that's the first point I would make, that it's great that they have this mindset that they want to get out there and be social.
Absolutely. I mean, being, you know, back when I was really, really heightened and anxious, it was one of those things. I was exactly the same. I'd want to go out and be social, but my anxiety would stop me. So a few things that I think are really beneficial is setting it up so that you're actually in control to start with. So maybe you choose the park or you choose the coffee shop, somewhere that you're really comfortable at yourself. So choosing a location that you go, okay, you know what? My nervous system knows this. I'm calm. And then, you know, inviting a couple of friends or just starting with one friend, you know, usually a quieter space so that the senses aren't so heightened, because for a lot of people with anxiety, lots of noise, lots of external stimulation can be triggering. So those things are really big in, you know, finding a safe person that you want to actually get out and socialize with, a safe location for you that you choose. And then also even little things like, you know, maybe it's something that you actually drive your car to it. So you know that if you're not feeling great and you want to leave, then you can go. So just baby steps like that, because we need to also have that exposure therapy to know that, you know what, I can go out for a little while. There's no expectations for me to stay out all night or, you know, have 30 people to entertain. Just baby steps. Getting comfortable, and then after you've done something really successfully, your body goes, you know what? I'm okay in that situation. I can do that again.
Yeah, so what you're explaining, like you said, is exposure therapy, which we know is so beneficial for anxiety, especially social anxiety, people who have panic attacks out in public. And that's exposing yourself to the situations to teach the brain that yes, it's uncomfortable, but we can sit with the uncomfortable feeling. A lot of people, when they're in them situations, will move away from the situation. And that teaches the brain that situation was dangerous. So it keeps you in this cycle of the next time you go to, say, a restaurant where you felt anxious, because you left the restaurant, your brain thinks that by leaving, that reduces the anxiety. So it actually puts more anxiety on this situation of the restaurant. And you can get into this cycle of avoiding restaurants, and this is how agoraphobia can start, which we know is a side effect of well, a complication of anxiety, where people safe space becomes smaller and smaller, so they'll first avoid the restaurant, and then they may start to avoid driving towards the restaurant or driving in general. And we know for a lot of people that can result in them really struggling to leave the house. So exposure therapy is extremely important in the treatment of anxiety. It's great to do it with a therapist, but you can do it with the right self-help tools. So make sure to speak to your doctor or whoever's you're under about the correct resources. Because, like you said, the internet is wonderful, but it's this mass information, and we can really start to look at the wrong things. So make sure you're looking at the right things that can help you. And I agree with you. I think for someone going through an anxiety disorder, gradual exposure is better. So, because you have the two, don't you? We have flooded exposure, which is putting yourself right directly into the situation and feeling all those intense anxiety symptoms. Or we have gradual exposure, which is baby steps, doing it at your own pace and seeing the results, and just teaching the brain that it's okay to be in these situations. It's okay if the anxiety comes, and you're capable of doing these things. I do agree that for someone going through anxiety, gradual exposure, it just seems to be a little bit easier than putting yourself in that situation. And I know that by scientific studies, both techniques, gradual and flooded, have the same results. So I don't know if you agree that gradual exposure just seems to be a little bit easier
Yeah,
for us
absolutely. Because
anxious
I think too
folks.
many variables, we can't control it. And sometimes I feel like that's what we need. We still need to know that it's okay. There's things here that, you know, if we're not feeling great, we actually can control. I'll give you a little thing that happened to me a while back. If we've got time for it, I had been really
Of
trying
course,
hard
yeah.
and regulating myself after that COVID episode. And I felt very overstimulated in a lot of environments. And I actually bought my mum and sister and three nieces a ticket to go to a theatre show in Brisbane. So we got in the car, drove all the way up there. I drove, no problem, parked, went up into the theatre, sat there, and I felt very uncomfortable. And I could feel a little anxiety panic attack starting to creep in. My heart rate was up about 140. I was getting very hot. I was feeling way too overstimulated. So I just excused myself to my mom, said, I don't feel well. I'm going to go outside. But I couldn't lower my heart rate down, and I was quite panicky. So for about an hour, I was out of the theater at 144 beats a minute, you know, in Brisbane, big theater, nowhere near my safe zone. And so family came and found me, and they said, what do you want to do? And I said, look, just give me the car keys. I'm going to go and sit in the car, turn the air conditioner on because I also need to feel cool. I knew I had a banana in the car, so I needed some food. And 40 minutes later, I was regulated, met them after the show finished, and walked up and had lunch. Whereas if I would have gone, oh no, I need to get out of here, I know it would have been a very long time before I could probably have gone to the city and exposed myself to a large group of people in a big area. But I just knew what I needed to come back to regulation. Yeah. And then once I was regulated, I was okay. I was like, okay, let's go have lunch. But I needed that control factor That's of wonderful. I'm safe. I know that I can go here, I can regulate, and then I can go back and face the world.
That's wonderful. Do you think you would have done that situation if you were on your own still?
To be honest,
I think that's an interesting question, isn't it?
I would have jumped in the car and tried to drive home, like, to escape to a safe space. Yeah. But because I knew I had those safe people there, I felt like, no, like, and I wanted to actually enjoy myself. And, you know, that was the thing. I kind of didn't want to give in to my anxiety. And like you said, you know, flee from something and then cause a problem with not being able to go back into spaces like that.
Yeah, so that's wonderful what you did, what you said. You let the anxiety reduce and then put yourself back into the situation, teaching the brain, hey, yes, we had to regulate, but that's okay. And now we're back in that situation. Exactly. It's not dangerous. So I think that's really important for the people listening and who will be listening to understand that by putting yourself back into the situation, you're teaching the brain that is not dangerous, and that over time will start to reduce the anxiety. Sometimes when you go back into that situation, the anxiety will come back. It's not about completely getting rid of the anxiety. It's about knowing that you can sit with that uncertainty. And what you'll find that if it does come back, if you keep exposing yourself to that situation, that it'll start to reduce. So the first time you might have a panic attack, second time it might be high levels of anxiety, but it doesn't overflow into a panic attack, and then over time it'll start to reduce. So that's some really great tips there. And I love your honesty as well, because I know a lot of anxious people will be able to relate with that when they're on their own, sometimes it gets too overwhelming and they just want to run for the exit and like you say, just leave the situation. But just shows how important it was for you in that situation and how it didn't turn into a cycle, because that easily could have turned into you avoiding theatres, then avoiding shopping centres, anywhere where there's a big group of people. And that's very, very common with anxiety.
And that's also what I say to a lot of my clients. And I also remind myself, you don't just go and run a marathon, you train for it. So, using your somatic tools and nervous system regulation exercises, you're actually training your nervous system so that you can go up and down with the flows, but it's not such highs and lows. So that's what I always say, little tools every day to keep you regulated and keep your nervous system regulated make such a difference to being able to then put yourself out in situations where normally it would trigger you.
No, that's wonderful. I think we have time for one more question, Corinna, if that's okay. Let me pick a great one. So there's so many questions. So a different perspective. So someone's asking why do people irritate anxious people? So when we're feeling anxious, it can spill over into irritability. If you can just explain the reason why that you think, I think I definitely know the reason why from my end. And also, how can we support someone who's anxious as well? So it looks like that maybe this person wants to support someone they know who's anxious, but they realize that they can be irritable. Do you have any tips for them in this situation?
I know personally for myself, if I'm in the throes of feeling quite anxious and say I'm, spending a bit of time with my mom or my sister, if I'm not feeling great, I get very, very irritable towards them. But that's more so because I'm in such a heightened state that I'm kind of trying to regulate myself and I just feel like I need like some time to regulate. And so I kind of get a little bit irritated and not snappy, but it's just because I'm so kind of wound up and in the moment that I just need to be like, look, I just need to be able to kind of catch some breaths and regulate. But also it's where we are in our nervous system. That irritability it's very, very common when we're in that fight flight. When we're more in our dorsal, we're a little bit more low and kind of flat and depressed and can't get started. So it's kind of people don't really bother us because it's like whatever. But usually when we're up here in our fight and fight and flight, that's when we're kind of very irritated towards other people.
No, yeah, that's, and just regarding how this person can help the other person, what advice would you give to a loved one or a friend or co-worker who wants to help the friend
I would say
that's
be
dealing
really
with
patient.
Anxiety?
You know, the number of times I've heard someone say to me, oh yeah, you cancel plans, or yeah, I don't know why you're anxious. Like, people sometimes, if they've never struggled with it, they just don't understand how debilitating it can be. And you know, it can be depressing when that's your life that you're dealing with, because you know, at the end of the day, you want to get up and be social and go and do things. You don't want anything limiting you. So you know, I've heard a number of times, you know, just think differently. Just flip your thoughts. And I'm like, if only to flip my thoughts, you know, the magic pill. You know, it's fine. Just stop thinking that way. Just get angry with it. You know, and they say it with a kind heart, but I don't think people understand when you're in the throes of anxiety, just how debilitating it can be. So what I would suggest is, if you are trying to support someone who's got anxiety, just to be really patient and ask them what they need. What do you need? You know, do you need me to listen? Do you need me to just sit here? Do you want to go for a walk together? Can I cook you something to eat? Do you just want me to sit on the couch and we'll put a feel-good movie on? You know, ask them what they need, because you might be surprised. Someone might just want you to take them for a drive and get some fresh air. Someone might just want to verbally diarrhea what's going on and have someone just be there to listen.
Yeah, and that's wonderful what you said about it's not coming from a horrible place. It doesn't mean they don't care for you. It's just that little bit lack of psychoeducation, isn't it? So if they want to learn about the subject as well, I think that's useful, because it can help them understand what the other person's going through. And I love what you said about not fixing, because when we're going through an anxiety disorder, trust me, we've tried everything. We've Googled every technique, every tip. So sometimes an external person telling us what to do, can be irritable, irritating, for someone dealing with anxiety. So I love that. Be compassionate. Tell them that they're there, that you're there for them, and just help them on their journey. And like you say, just be open to do whatever. Like, it might be a movie, it might be going for a walk and breaking that cycle. But yeah, just being supportive is a huge thing and really beneficial for someone going through anxiety. I'd like to thank you, Corinna, for your wonderful insights. So it's been a fantastic live, one of the most practical tool lives I think we've had in a long time. So thank you so much for sharing those experiences. I know that the community members will start to use the things you've said in their daily lives, and it's going to really help them reduce anxiety. For everyone who wants to follow your journey and follow you on Instagram, how can they find you on Instagram?
Yes, so it's Corinna Hancock _ kinesiology.
Fantastic. And regarding the things that you offer, so I know that you deal with clients, is that just in Australia, or can people book you worldwide? Can you do it virtually? And how can they look into that? Do you have a website?
Jump on my Instagram. There is a little Linktree link there with ways that you can work with me. But I work with everybody from anywhere in the world. We can do EFT tapping sessions and also beautiful kinesiology balances. And I've also got a beautiful, it's called the Calm Method. And it's a program designed to support people going through anxiety, where it's kind of everything that I was looking for rolled into one place. You know, it's just about providing support for people who need it. So yeah, there's a number of ways we can work together. And if anyone wants to reach out, I would absolutely love to chat.
I think everyone who's been through an anxiety journey, like myself, so that's why I created so many books to help people, because it's what we didn't have, isn't it, when we were going through our anxiety journey. So I can relate to what you said there Have you curated this to help people, or would have helped you at the start of
Oh,
your
it's all the
anxiety
stuff
journey,
that I wish
right?
I would have known probably 15 years ago, to be honest. And I never want anyone to be in the position where, you know, they feel like they've exhausted all options, because for a lot of people still it's, you know, we go to our GP or a psychologist and we kind of go, oh, well, if I'm not feeling like my anxiety is getting better with just those two, what else can I do? And there is so much available to us. So yeah, being able to share these tips and little tricks, it doesn't have to be anything elaborate. Yeah, so I'm really passionate about it. And I want to say thank you to you, because this is a phenomenal page that you do, the information you share. I actually got your book after COVID when I was really sick again with anxiety, and it made a world of difference to me. So thank you for everything you're doing too.
No, thank you. And like you say, it's the individuals in the community. Like when I was at the start of an anxiety journey, I didn't have a community of people, like-minded people coming together to share experiences. So that's why I wanted to create a community like this, for people to feel less alone. Because, you know, Corinna, when you're going through anxiety, you often feel isolated, you feel trapped. So speaking to other people who are going through an anxiety journey, maybe at a different stage, can really give you this sense of relief. It can really take the boulder from the shoulders and show you there's light at the end of the tunnel, and that you're not always going to feel this way. And I think sometimes that can be really important, and that's what we need. And also, for some people, a support network, they don't have the luxury of that. So being able to have a virtual community can be really helpful for them as well. So I can see that it runs through the blood of you, the passion for helping other people, and that's for myself as well, because we know what the journey was like, and we know that these little things to help everyone can really benefit them. And I love what you said, and I think that's a great place to end it, that with anxiety, there is so many different tools, there's so many different options. If one doesn't work for you, don't panic, because one will work for you, or a selection will work for you. I often say anxiety recovery, it's an individual approach. It's about curating your own tools that work for you, your own techniques, and then helping you on that journey as you start to take those baby steps forward. Just before you go, do you do journaling? Do you find journaling
Yeah,
useful?
so very similar to what you were saying, you know, sometimes it just depends what I feel I need. Sometimes I'll just do, we call it free writing in kinesiology. Sorry, it's getting dark here. I don't have any lights on in my house.
Oh, it's
Yeah, so
okay, no
sometimes with
problem.
free journaling or free writing, what you do is you just grab a notepad, just journal everything on how you're thinking, what thoughts are coming out. After two or three pages, get it, rip it up, toss it in the bin, or, you know, outside in a fire pit. Don't reread it. But the idea is just to get everything out onto a piece of paper, and then you give yourself permission to go, do you know what? I'm not going to think about that again until tomorrow at 6 a.m. when I'm journaling again. And that's sometimes a really nice way of breaking the thought patterns too. If you're ruminating on something, dump it on the page, but say to yourself, I'm going to set a boundary where I've thought about that for the day. Now tomorrow, I'll brain dump again at 6 a.m. in the morning.
Someone just put that's good about the journal, and that's a great technique. It's a great idea as well. Yeah, so that's wonderful. I can see how that works, because, like you say, ruminating on these anxious thoughts, you getting it out into the open, you're moving that attention from inwards out into the open, and it breaks the cycle, doesn't it? Because it's not that you're avoiding it, you're literally writing those thoughts down, you're addressing it, and but then you're moving on from it. So another great technique. I know a similar technique, they call it worry time, where you set a specific time in the day. It's a CBT technique where you set a specific time, and only at that time you're allowed to address all the worries that may have built up during the day. So if you set it for, say, 7 p.m. in the evening, what you'll find is those worries that you had at 9 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, when you come to 7 p.m., they're no longer worries. So you're teaching the brain that, hey, even though I was worried at this time, when it comes to 7 p.m., I'm no longer worrying about it. So that's a useful tool. But those worries that may still be lingering, you can then address them. So a very, very similar technique and very useful, powerful tool. And that's great that you're using that with your clients. So Corinna, thank you so much for coming on and sharing so many tips. Been wonderful to connect with you virtually. And yeah, just continue to do the great things. This will go live tomorrow on the platform for everyone who wants to rewatch it. And also within the next 7 to 10 days, we'll get this converted over to a podcast. We've got a big, large podcast following. So everyone who wants to listen, because I know that not everybody likes visual, they like to put their earphones in and just chill out. They can listen to the podcast, which is fantastic. So have a wonderful rest of your day, Corinna.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you, thank you so much.
No problem.